Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers Podcast. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer MTG format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I am your host, Kevin Finkel, joined here by my co-host,
Ryan Schwenk, the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan.
Yep, and we know new is a big part of what we talk about, and we certainly have some new things going on with Kaldheim. Has officially, you know, I think today when we're recording is the first day it's available on Modo, as well as I think to the public on Arena.
So you can do like your pre-releases or your drafts and stuff, right?
Okay, is that how it works? They're not available for... I know Modo is pretty much all open.
Does that mean you can actually play it and construct it on Modo right now as well?
As far as I know, yeah.
I did not know that.
I'll have to double check that. I just joined a sealed, but that's all the time I've had today.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how that worked. So I'll have to check that out afterwards then.
But I was watching, you know, Ekeros stream earlier, so he was playing Pioneer. I'd assume it was a real league.
So he actually had some of the new cards in there?
Yep.
Great. Yep. We'll have to have him on later. So, today's topic.
So, new stuff, yes. Yeah. Well, we wanted to talk. You know, it's still early here, and people are wondering what's going to be interesting for the upcoming season. So, it's a little bit early for us to talk about the true competitive changes, because as much as we are, you know, oracles of the format and just complete gods at competitive Pioneer, we are not, you know, the number one pros in the world who are going to be figuring out what really is the best new decks for the meta.
Yeah.
So we're going to wait a little bit on that for the competitivist brews, and we're instead going to do something fun and talk about some, you know, spicy, just get our creative juices going on some deep brews. You know, I don't know about you, I'm feeling juicy.
Are
you
feeling juicy? God. I've brewed more here than I have like in the last five sets, I think.
I went pretty hard too. You know, I was really feeling it. I did feel like new cards had a lot of different applications. You know, if you guys were following me on Twitter already, I had posted 20 deck lists of early. You know, some of them were just updates to existing decks. Some of them were going pretty deep on new cards to be trying janky. We're gonna, you know, go over some brews, you know, in person, you know, talk about them here. A couple of the brews that I talked about, you've got some brews here. We also, you know, the big announcement.
So we decided to kind of join up with the Crew 3 podcast to kind of share our brews with each other. And we're going to, they have some of our brews, and we got some of their brews, and we are going to critique them and, you know, talk about them on air a little bit. Kind of our first time, you know, sharing stuff between, you know, I guess we could say this is like cross content, I guess.
Yeah, and they've definitely been known for some brews. I know they've been pushing pretty hard on like the black-white warrior hammer decks.
Yeah, so I mean that's really cool. You know, they're going from a completely different direction, you know, with a lot of their ideas and a lot of their brews. So it gives you something totally different to think about.
And now for something totally different. Well, how do you want to jump into this? You want to go with you know, one of yours, one of ours, one of theirs?
Well, here's the thing. I wanted to talk about what cards you are most excited to brew around. Like when you...
I mean, that was the whole...
like we kind of talked about it a little bit last week with our set review, but...
Yeah, yeah.
But like I would say, you know, just real quick, run down the list what you wanted to play with. What excited you the most?
Well, high level, I think the gods are something that really I wanted to try most of them. You know, they're such a unique effect that it is something that's hard to fully justify whether or not it's good without having tested it. I also the Foretell cards quite a bit. Probably the card I was most interested in brewing in. You know, I did three or four decks with Mystic Reflection in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big one. And then some of the tribal stuff. You know, I was looking at warriors, looking at elves, looking at what other tribes we could really go with. That and snow. You know, I did try a couple of different snow builds.
Yeah. I think it's still missing a critical mass, but I think there's definitely potential there.
Yeah, you heard me go pretty critical on it last week as far as what I thought it would be playability-wise.
Yeah, and pretty much the same for me. Like, I was more, like, as far as gods are concerned, I was really focused on Tor'alf and Turgrid. I thought those would be fun cards to brew around. You know, we talked about the World Tree before. I thought that would be a cool card to, you know, do some brewing around. And Finn the Fangbearer, I think I talked about before. About how that...
Ooh, okay.
the Death Touch guy. I mean, you know me, I love Jank. So, you know, I thought that would be another fun brewing card. Maybe it doesn't have to be a good card, but, you know, as far as for brewing...
Do you have a brew with that? Because that I'm excited to see where you went with it.
I don't have a brew with that yet. I thought of like three more decks last night.
You want to quick brew it up? Because, you know, there's the Vraska that's a Death Touch Lord.
Yeah, whenever a creature with Death Touch kills. Or just, no.
I think it's when it deals damage to a creature or a planeswalker that planeswalker dies. Something else.
Yeah, too. I haven't even like looked into it yet, but it's on the list. I can make that, but I'll probably just post it on Twitter later. So if anybody's interested, just check there. So like you said, the tribal stuff, I was more interested in Magda for dwarves and the Righteous Valkyrie. And I think I've been talking about those a little bit already in past podcasts. I also thought that maybe Dream Devourer would be kind of interesting. You know, it makes everything, it gives everything foretell, and it you know, makes everything 2 mana cheaper to cast.
I was less big on that one, but it's interesting.
But I thought, you know, I had been talking about Heartless Summoning before as a card to kind of make your really big demons and other things cheaper. And, you know, again, I didn't make I started to brew a deck with it, but I don't have a finish for today's podcast. But
yeah, I know you're getting silly with, like, multiple cost reduction, something or other.
And then there's the last one I thought was interesting was In Search of Greatness.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a tough card. I've tried that in one deck, and it was okay. I think that I ended up deciding it wasn't main deckable, and I wasn't sure when I would bring it in, so it's probably going to get cut.
Something to brew.
I'm waiting to see if somebody can figure out if that card's good, because so far no one seems to have any idea. Which means that probably the answer is not good, but maybe someone will find a situation where it is really good. Where I was trying it, my thought was like, I'll try it in Elves. You know, they've got a lot of ones, a lot of twos, a lot of threes, so you're likely to hit something. And most of their fours are Collected Company, so that seems to work well with, like, you play Collected Company, and then you're still only on three, so you're not gonna, you know, not be able to hit anything within Search of Greatness. But I don't know. That it didn't really work out.
Yeah. I think we were talking about the idea of playing it with Ley Lines last time.
Yeah, and, you know, the green one's banned. That makes it a lot less interesting.
Yeah.
The blue one is something, but, like, we're going, I guess you can go green-blue, you know, throw some Nissas, maybe play, what's the guy who draws cards and gains life when you cast him? The Hydra.
Hydroid Krasis?
Yeah, Hydroid Krasis. Yeah, we haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah. So that was an idea. So before we jump into our brews, I think I sent this question to you last night. What cards do you think kind of enable brewing? Maybe, you know, we've been talking forever about how we thought there were so many more decks available in the Pioneer, you know, formats, but like they were just missing a few cards. So do you think any cards from this new set actually kind of make, you know, archetypes more viable now? Like, do any stick out? I feel like
there's more of that in this set than usual, basically. You know, the kind of cards that we can really build around are ones that have synergies built into them, that have, you know, reasons to go for a certain kind of deck, and not just raw power cards. You know, raw power cards can maybe sometimes make a deck if, like, that deck wasn't already good. You know, a great three drop in black or something like that could maybe make a black deck playable, but more often, you know, there's already a lot of good playable cards across the curve, and it's more if you can find something that has synergy is where you'd end up building around it.
Yeah, so
you know, maybe the exception here is like Doomscar, but there's not a lot of cards that are just like paper.
Does Doomscar enable brewing? I don't think so.
Maybe not in brewing, but an archetype. Yeah, I was more talking about like what enables archetypes.
I'm thinking, I mean, I wouldn't say it enables archetypes at all either. Doomscar is just another piece. It's a good card. It's a good solid, you know.
I would say the one place where I would say that it does enable is that it's a mono white sweeper. You know, we've had black white good sweeper, and we've had black blue good sweeper. If I wanted to play something like white red, white green, you know, Abzan, something that doesn't really fit into Supreme Verdict.
We had Shatter the Sky before.
Maybe that opens you up. Yeah, I don't
want
that.
But here's my example. So you were talking about Rise of the Dreadmar before, and I thought that was like a really cool deck cool card that kind of enables more brewing, as far as, like, you know, people were talking about playing Rel of the Ancestors. I saw you testing that out the other day, and, you know, you sacrifice all your creatures and then you make all these 2/2s for 1 mana.
Yeah. Yep.
So it makes that past, you know, archetype much better. It enables you to play those brews. The other card, they had a couple more, like, for example, Valky, I thought was like really a really good card. You know, the people were trying to cheat.
Yeah, that's just a great card.
Cheats into play and stuff like that. I think that makes a lot of those types of archetypes a lot better. Realmwalker, I think, is another card that, you know, will do a really good job in certain, tribal strategies.
And I don't want to go too much that's repeating kind of what we did in our set review.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I only had a couple, you know, things that I thought were, how can I say, that would enable. And like you said, Mystic Reflection, good for like cloning stuff. And Elvish Warmaster, I thought was another really good card that kind of supports, you know, more brews. Not so much build around, but supports it.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Magdi, unless you already did, or Magda.
Well, I already did. I mean, I mentioned it earlier with what, you know, I wanted to brew around, so it's in there as well.
Okay.
I actually have 10 more, but I'm not going to go through them all.
Oh, God, no. That's what the set review is for.
Yeah, so I was just saying what I thought helps out the most. So, now, let's talk about your brews. So, what are you bringing to the table today? Let's do like we did last time. We have you kind of talk about your brew, tell us how it works, and then afterwards, the other person can maybe give some feedback, some inputs, maybe some suggestions.
Oh my goodness! All right. Well, I feel like I've talked about a lot of these. Do you want to pick one out from my deck dump that you want to focus in on?
Yeah. Give me a second. I have your list up, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I could talk about that number two right there.
Well, your Jeskai Fires
number
deck?
Number four. Yeah, something more competitive, a little serious here.
I mean,
that's really, you know, building around one new card.
I want to hear about Green White Angels, actually, because
we
went in two different directions. So I want to hear about your version first.
All right. Yeah. And that's one I think I've been talking up pretty much since we saw it was, you know, leaked pretty early on, that Righteous Valkyrie is, you know, Righteous Valkyrie, Bishop of Wings. Those two cards just go so well together. I think people have been talking about it. You know, they both gain life on each other entering. They both gain a ton of life really quickly when you've got things like the Resplendent Angel, any of the other good cheap angels, you know, Youthful Valkyrie, Angel of Vitality. And I feel like I've talked about this list enough that I'm kind of not sick of it, but it's still just as explosive as the first time I described it. You know, you can suddenly gain 20, 30 life in a turn, and that really closes the door against pretty much anything.
So,
especially when Resplendent Angel makes everything so big. You know, you've got flyers, so you're not just like a basic beatdown deck.
So have you been testing this at all?
I have, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly where I want to go. So, you know, the version that I think I linked, it's running as the early drops. It's running Speaker of the Heavens, which is, you know, a cleric. It has the ability to make those angels, so when you're a little bit ahead, it turns the corner really well. As well as Luminarch Aspirant as just a good beater that's early, and also, you know, a cleric, so the clerics trigger Resplendent Angel. I found that, you know, triggering Resplendent Angel to gain one life here, one life there, isn't the best, so I did try out a couple different versions. You know, I tried Selfless Spirit is another nice cleric in this spot. I tried I've tried a version that has Elvish Mystic and Llanowar Elves instead. You know, that makes the deck a lot faster. But it also does mean that you run out of gas sooner, so if your opponent's able to, you know, one for one you, then you don't have as many just cards that create pressure. So I'm still trying to figure out what the right way to go is on this. I think that this is a deck that I would look at to expect to see just on raw power. Like, this is a deck that you should see in the format.
Yeah, I would say you're just looking at it, it's kind of unrefined. I think it definitely could use a little bit more maybe oomph, more card advantage or something, you know, to just be able to get around board wipes and stuff like that. Because like you said, it looks like it's going to run out of gas real quick. Like, for example... you have two Skyclave Cleric. Isn't this just kind of like a free card? Why not play four?
Well, it comes into play tapped. That comes up a lot.
Well, I mean, if you're bringing it in with Coco, who cares, right?
Well, it's not a land if you're bringing it in with Coco, though.
Oh, I know. But I'm saying you don't have a lot of one drops that you really need to worry about, you know, playing on turn one. So I think it'd be fine to just go up to four.
You know, maybe you could try three in there. I think that two's been pretty safe. You know, I have found it impactful that it comes into play on tap.
Okay.
And again, I guess it depends on the version. If you're running dorks, that's a big difference, because then you need more untapped green sources on one.
And you're still set on four deck and stones, huh?
I mean, this is, yeah, that list. I think that for removal, yeah, that's still what I want to be on. Can't think of much else that really does that job better. I really want to be exiling the things that I remove, and I would like to be able to get rid of anyone going wide.
This reminds me of, I just thought of a meme, you know, we say, we want Path of Exile, you know, in Pioneer, and then the mom says, oh, we have Pioneer, or we have Path of Exile in Pioneer, and then this is the Path of Exile at home. It's deck and stone. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
You know, I was thinking, you know, I don't know if you've watched a lot of the complaints recently about removal. I don't want to go deep into that because that's a whole rant.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting. I remember when Deck and Stone was so good, it was because nothing else had exile removal at the time. You know, black didn't have exile.
Uh-huh.
Red didn't have much exile. So white was so good because it could, you know, kill a hangerback walker, which nobody else could do.
Yeah.
Now everybody, every color gets exile removal, so kind of has lost its spot there.
Real quick, before we move on to the next deck, tell me about your sideboard real quick. How would you be setting this?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a thought. If you're looking at the current sideboard I have, I'm just trying out a couple things. Let me quick check if I've tried anything else out in a newer version here. Just real quick. That's not the deck I wanted. Yeah, so, you know, Dromoka's Command, that's a nice one against aggro. It also gets rid of enchantments, which is good against certain decks. You know, Light of Hope, that's really against aggro. You want to be getting rid of those things that are stopping you from gaining life,
mm-hmm.
which they tend to run. Apostle of Purifying Light was what I tried running as my, like, hate against
aggro and
the graveyard decks.
Yeah.
You know, I played it because it's a cleric. I don't know if that's actually necessary. You know, if we just ran Scavenging Ooze or even just Lantern, something like that would probably be fine there.
I would say the mana might make it a little bit difficult to use just because, you know, you're only playing 21 lands with the clerics in play and, you know, you're not going to have a lot. And you're not even playing Elf, so I think you'd have trouble exiling. Banisher Priest is interesting, though.
Yeah, Banisher Priest should probably just be Skyclave Apparition. You know, being a cleric, I don't think matters as much as being removal.
Yeah.
Realm Walker, then, is another great one. That is nice because it is a way for you to bring that in the slower matchups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can Coco into play, and then it just finds angels off the top of your library. It makes you a little bit faster. Yeah. You know, a little bit longer running against those decks that are going to sweep you out.
Okay. All right, so do you want to move on to one of my picks? Do you want to choose?
Yeah, let's go to one of yours. This is what I'm excited about. I always love looking at other people's brews. So, guys, you know, send me your brews. I can always find, you know, I can give you serious critiques, or I can always find some other weird, obscure card you didn't even think of to make the deck even more brewy. But, you know, whichever one of those you're feeling.
So, any of those? My choice, let's or go do you want to choose? Up to you.
I was letting you choose there.
Oh, if I can get a... if I can choose, I think I would just go with my angel one that went the other direction.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about how you did angels differently here.
So I did a black-white version of angels, and it's more actually like a cleric angel build. It focuses more on that tribal. You focus a little bit more on angels and three drops, and mine is more kind of going for like a combo win. So a lot of the cards are the same. Speaker of the Heavens, Angel of Vitality, I got some in there. Bishop of Wings, Skyclave Clerics, I got four of those in here. What else do I have that's the same? I have Lyra's at the top end.
Yeah, so really your core of Resplendent Angel, Righteous Valkyrie, Bishop of Wings, those stayed the same.
Yeah.
So you've cut the Youthful Angel, which was my early drop.
Yeah. So
instead you've got... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worrying so much about, you know, the, how could I say? I'm not worrying so much about the early game just because I have huge blockers in Bishop of the Wings and Cleric, and then I just gain so much life from Righteous Valkyrie and Bishop of Wings. It just totally negates any advantage they have early on. And I'm playing black, so I get the removal. I have Fatal Push. I have Eliminate in here. I have Murderous Rider for Planeswalkers. Erebos Intervention is, this kind of comes into play both as a way to get, you know, rid of graveyard decks, but also my other black card I'm playing in here is Vito, Thorn of the Duskrose, which is a 1-3 cleric, and whenever you gain life, so you're going to be gaining, in testing I've been gaining like 20, 30, 40 life in one turn, just from multiple angel activations, so you could easily win the game just by having Vito in play. And he also gives everybody lifelink as well, which is another way to, you know, become a huge headache for, you know, your opponents. So really good against aggro. Yeah, Erebos Intervention basically becomes like a fireball effect kind of later on for towards an opponent. The other black cards I have are Tabarak, because he's a cleric, and I wanted more card draw. I thought you kind of were lacking that in your deck, so this Tabarak kind of gets around that. Whenever, you know, that's Skyclave Cleric or the Speaker dies, I can pay a life, draw a card, pay a life, draw a card, and he gets bigger. So that's something I thought that fixed that problem. And also, I figured, you know, Eili, Eternal Pilgrim, she's a 2-3 death touch. She's a great blocker early on. She lets me sacrifice cards if I need to, which kind of works with Tabarak. And if I have 30 life, she can exile any permanent in play other than lands. So I figured, why not?
Yeah, so the big thing that you're losing is that you don't have the Collected Company.
No.
Which is what let me, you know, I still have more card advantage than you because Collected Company.
Yeah. Well, then I have Agadeem's Awakening in here, which lets me bring cards back from the graveyard. So if I needed another activation, you know, bring back a Speaker, a Bishop, and, you know, a Righteous Valkyrie, I could do that. So, I mean, should I talk about the sideboard, or do you want to ask about the sideboard, or do you
think... Yeah, you know, just looking through the sideboard. So you've got a couple sweepers in there, which is something, you know, I wasn't going for. So maybe you want to... When would you go to that more controlling role that you'd bring in sweepers and Heliod's Intervention?
So Heliod's Intervention is definitely against Esper Yorion type decks, where they're playing, like, tons of how could I say, you know, enchantments and whatnot.
Or auras, I assume.
Doomscar, I think I would bring in against maybe, like, Gruul decks... You know, that just can hit for like 10, 12 damage really quick.
Because or like Mono Green.
What'd you say?
Or like Mono Green.
Yeah, Mono Green. So like those ramp decks that just get out of control really quickly and I kind of run out of removal. Or I can't like block, you know, favorably. This deck blocks very well against 1 and 2 drops, you know, that are like red and black and whatnot. But like green, kind of has a, you know, a problem at that point. Containment Priest. This is something I didn't see in your deck. I thought maybe because, you know, it doesn't really work well with your Coco, but, you know, this is something I can play to stop ETB effects or to stop cards coming back from the graveyard with Oops All Spells or to come back from, you know, sorry, to stop Coco, etc. And the other one I had in here is Ajani, the Strength of the Pride. So his +1 is gain life to equal all creatures and planeswalkers. So if you have 4 in play plus him, you can basically get a Resplendent Angel trigger, which is nice. His -2 is make a Johnny Pride mate, so whenever you gain life it gets bigger, which is cool. And his -0 is if you have 35 life, he exiles all creatures and artifacts your planeswalker your opponent controls. So
okay.
Figured it'd be all right.
So I think the thing I'm most excited about with this version of your list is probably that veto interaction. Yeah. That seems really cool. Especially, you know, he's a cleric as well. I don't think you called that out.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a veto. All these are either clerics or angels.
So why don't we combine? Why don't we take your list, put Coco in it?
Yeah.
You know, we'll still get black removal, but we'll get veto and maybe Eili as well?
Sure.
I could, we'll try that out. See if it's interesting.
I could drop the angels maybe in the Agadeem's Awakening. But then I'd have too much removal, probably. I'd have to fix that.
Yeah. And you do have a little bit too much removal, possibly, anyways, for what should be an aggro list.
Well, it's not aggro. Mine's more mid-range, I think.
Oh, well, you can't be mid-range. Yeah. You can't be mid-range when mid-range in this format is drawing 25 cards with Omnath.
Okay. I guess so, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm still brewing it up. So my turn. Okay. I'm going to choose another one of your... things. Let's see.
Do we not want to jump over to the Crew 3 ones, or do we want to do that at the end?
I was going
to
do that at the end, if that's okay.
I'm letting you run the show. It's all you.
So tell me about Blue-Green Elementals, because I've always kind of wanted to do that.
Oh, that one's not on my list of things that are good. I'm still trying to get this to work. I really want, the idea is that, you know, Master Waves is a great card. I want to see how I can get Master Waves to work with Mystic Reflection, because those two work so favorably, even if you only have a little bit of blue devotion in play. So I don't know if you guys have seen this, or if, you know, I tweeted it out pretty early. I think Frank Karsten also, you know, tweeted out the same math that I had done. So, okay, you've got one blue pip in play, or let's say you got two blue pips in play. You play Master of Waves. The trigger goes in the stack. You cast Mystic Reflection, which you can cast for up to one if you've already exiled it. You're going to make three elementals from Master of Waves, except instead of elementals, you're going to make Master of Waves, because that's what you target with your Mystic Reflection. So you'll have three more Master of Waves comes into play. Each one of them then sees five blue pips, so they're going to make five each. You're going to make 15 elementals, and they all get +4/+4. So, you know, that's 60 power of, or no, 75 power of elementals plus the Master of Waves, just because you've got two pips in play. Like, it really, really gets insane.
And I see that this is like a Nykthos stack. So I see a lot of green in here, though. Is that going to be okay, you think?
Yeah, so the version I was trying, I was kind of going a bit more in on the elemental style. You know, Risen Reef is another card that just works very well with Master of Waves. You know, the tokens that Master of Waves makes are elementals, so each one of them makes Risen Reef draw a card for you. I was trying, you know, Uro because I've got some green in there. And then I was just looking for other elementals that worked. I don't think this is good. You know, I've got, like, Embodiment of Spring, Shorecrusher Elemental, Parcel Beast. Like, these are not good cards. I do like at the top end, you know, Cavalier of Gales is a cool card that, you know, it's a beater. It's a 5/5 knight. It's also an elemental, which is nice with Risen Reef because you can, you know, you draw three, put two back. So you put a land on top and it automatically goes into play from Risen Reef trigger.
And how often do you think you'd be casting Agent of Treachery in this list?
You know, it's not unreasonable with the mana you can do. So once you've got kind of an absurd amount of mana, Nykthos can tap for a ton. You can pretty much draw your whole library by, you know, Master Waves, put a bunch of tokens in play, draw your whole deck, play a Thassa's Oracle and win that way, or play an Agent of Treachery the similar way. And then, you know, Thassa's Deep Delving is what I was messing with, as like, you know, bouncing, you know, flicker my Master Waves, I get all new tokens. And you do keep the old ones, they don't die in between. That's a cool trick.
I will say I like a lot of these throwbacks to like mono blue devotion in here. Like you got Tidebinder Mage in the sideboard, I see.
Yeah, that's a good one. If I'm against a red or green, that makes a lot better. You know, the deck's kind of lacking in one and two drops is where it's weak. I did try, you know, let me just quick ship you a 60, a slightly more aggro version. This is kind of...
I mean, this definitely has potential. I like the idea. And it's just a diamond in the rough, you know? It's something that you just got to, you know, keep refining.
Yeah, so I'm trying one, you know, that's not elemental themed, all mono blue, trying out things like Merfolk Trickster, Ascended Spirit. So this has Snow Lands then, and then Bind the Monster. And this one even runs the ley line, the blue ley line, to try and get some more devotion.
Yes.
So that's another way you can go with it. I don't know if this list is there either. I did post that in our deck list if anyone wants to follow along. But yeah, it's something I want to get to work. I think that Bind the Monster is a great card for this. It's a great way to get blue devotion and is cheap removal for an aggro list. I just need to figure out how to make this into a 60 or 75 that's viable, or decide that it's not and throw it away.
I think like your problem right now is that you had like 20 brews and you don't have time to update all of them and refine all of them.
Yeah, you know, I would say I can say I've tested all of these brews. I have played out, you know, a handful of games with all of them or more. That doesn't mean that they're all good. You know, this one, I didn't even give it a sideboard because I knew that it was not getting there as is.
All right. So which deck should I talk about next?
All right, let's go with this. Okay, you're going to make me say Waste Not. Let's talk about Waste Not, because I know that you were, at the minute we saw Tegrid, you were excited about, or Turgrid, you were excited about trying to brew more with this card and deck.
So Turgrid, for everybody that, you know, can't remember what she says, is she's a 4/5 mana for 5 mana, and whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent or discards a permanent card, you put that card from their graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. And the backside is a 4-mana artifact that you can tap to make them discard a card, pay 3 life, or sacrifice a permanent. So it kind of goes along with that front side. And then also, if you pay 4, you can untap it and use that ability again. So the idea was, you know, I was going to brew around her, and before I had like a red black version with Kroxa, and I had Collective Defiance in there, and I'd always kind of brewed around with the idea of playing Dark Deal, which cycles both people's hands, so it's not so good for me, But, you know, it's a good way to go through your opponent's hand much more quickly, especially if you hit a couple mana off. Sorry, if you have a Wayside in play and you cast Dark Deal and two mana go into the graveyard forever, sorry, for example, you can just keep chaining discard effects. So you can chain your Burglar Rats. You can, you know, keep playing your Palakka Perditions, which I have in there as like a freebie. Inscription of Ruins, another Dark Deal. You know, if you have four mana, you could even play, you know, a Calatis or a Liliana or a Rankle on that same turn. So that's basically the idea. It became mono black, put some snowlands in there so I could add in Faceless Haven. You know, I got four Castle Locked Lanes, some Gaia Reach Sanitariums to keep the discard going later on, a Tomb of Yawgmoth to make everything black. So I think this is pretty straightforward.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm interested. It seems a little slow with a lot of four and five drops, but maybe that's, that'd be my one concern, I think, here.
And there's just not a lot of good quality sacrifice or, you know, maybe I could play Plague Crafter, but that doesn't seem like a good card.
Yeah, probably not.
So, I mean, the idea, like I said, is the Waste Not, you know, turn two and then turn three, a big Dark Deal if you're playing as like a mid-range or a control deck. Against aggro, it's not that good. But, you know, one of the things I have run into in the past is that I'll have one of the combo pieces and not the others. So I decided to try out Wish Claw Talisman in this as a two of, just kind of to act as like a two more Waste Not kind of. You know, you tap one mana, you grab your Waste Not if you need it. You tap one mana, you draw your Dark Deal if you need it, or whatever else, you know, if you need a Turgrid. And you put it to your hand and then you play it the next turn. So, again, just a brew. And I think maybe the number one reason why I decided to build Mono Black is just because I wanted to play this on MTGO and I had a lot of the pieces already, but I didn't want to pay $100 for Crocsis.
Got it.
So, budget version of Waste Not.
Yeah, $90 is what it says right now. And, you know, if you cut the Lilianas, that's even cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, Lilianas are super expensive too. All right. No questions?
Too janky? Nothing too deep. I'm wondering if there's anything you should be doing with your own graveyard now that you don't have, maybe I could see running the, exile a card from a graveyard. You either gain three or draw a card, and then you can
Cling to Dust?
Pay four to flash it back. Yeah, that seems decent for this kind of deck.
I was thinking I could probably play that. I mean, in the sideboard, I have Empty the Pits. I wasn't sure what to put in there. That's the one that makes zombies and has Delve. I think you could take advantage of your own graveyard with Delve here. Just too bad I'm not playing green or blue, so playing a Tasker doesn't really work. Maybe a Gurmag Angular? I don't know, though.
Yeah, I don't know if you want Murderous Cut. That's probably too slow.
Yeah. Get rid of Murderous Rider. All right, so my choice. Should I choose one of yours again? You want to do maybe two more each?
Maybe. Let me see if there's any more that I want to specifically call out.
Yeah, let's have you can pick one of the ones that you're excited to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, or you can tell me if there's one that you're big on, but I feel like you're going to pick the ones that I'm like, no, this deck was bad. I kind of want to talk about this Jeskai Fires list.
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like that's not at all your kind of list. So really, this was built all around the idea of one new card. I think that's the only new card I've got in the 75, or actually, what is it, 95, because it's a Yorion deck, of course. So the Jeskai Transmogrify Fire, I took a look at Raven's Warding and whether or not that would be good in the deck. So if you guys remember, that's the 3-mana enchantment. It creates a blue 1/1 bird with flying. You gain 2 life. That's number one. Then whenever one or more creatures you control with flying deal combat damage to a player this turn, you look at their hand and you draw a card. And then three, you get a card from outside of the game, put it on top of your library. So everything this card does, you love. So you love getting the free 1/1 because you want a lot of creatures in the deck that aren't coming from creature spells so that you can transmogrify them. You want to gain life. It's nice that it's up front, unlike the Birth of Miletus also gains you life, but that one's at the end of it. Draws you cards. Love it. Looks at the opponent hand. Love it as a deck that, you know, opens the way for something like transmogrify. And then the ability to give this deck a wish board is huge. You know, we used to have Fires decks that would play the Wish Fairy, Fae of Wishes, but you can't do that if you're transmogrifying. But this lets you then access a sideboard again, so you get to play all kinds of just, like, silly, dirty things. You know, you can play a Thought Distortion and grab it. You can play a Luca in the sideboard and grab that as, you know, a fifth copy of your Transmogrify. You can grab a Sweeper. You can grab a Slaughter Games in game one. It also lets you grab, you know, often this deck would sideboard in something like a Resolute Archangel into aggro. You can grab that game one, which is just awesome.
I like this idea a lot, to be honest. Like,
yeah, you know, it's worked really well. And in fact, it is cool. It, you know, it puts it right on top of the library. So there are times that, you know, you still got the three agents, but if you put it on top and immediately transmogrify, you know you're going to hit whatever you just put into play.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just like this because it turns control into, I guess it's kind of control, but I guess I feel like this format is going to have a lot more toolbox decks now.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of a toolbox deck. But it, you know, it seemed like a card that fit everything I wanted to do with the Fire's existing shell.
Mm.
And, you know, lets me play some fun. You know, I love making a wish board and putting fun, silly things in there. Like, I tried out a few things. I've got, I think the spiciest thing I did while brewing, I've got a 1-0 Starfield of Nyx in the sideboard here.
I like it. I think it's great. You know, you have so many, I mean, there's, like, what, 60% enchantments in this deck?
Yeah, I mean, I've got 23 main deck enchantments, so I'm happy to grab, you know, especially with the ones that die, like the Omens, the Birth of Miletus, the Raven's Warning, the Shark Typhoons. Mm-hmm. You can grab a Shark Typhoon that you cycled and put into play.
So, I gotta ask, why Void Winnerer? What are you bringing that in against?
So, that's not my tech. That's something that these decks have been doing. There are just some decks, I think especially, like, the Lotus combo really can't answer through that. It's decent against Omnath, I think. I might bring it in against, you know, probably not bring it in against Controlin, but like, you know, it's just a, there are times where Agent of Treachery isn't good. Maybe not so much anymore, but like Sacrifice and Aura decks, usually you couldn't really grab anything because they'll just sacrifice it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Void Winnerer can really shut those things down, you know, especially like Lurrus decks can sometimes get, you know, it's better than an agent against a Lurrus deck because it's a bigger body and shuts things down.
Mm-hmm. I tested against somebody who's playing this the other day, and I thought there's a lot of really clever interactions in there. Like, you know, you can turn your Gideon into a creature attack and then transmogrify into, you know, what, the Agent of Treachery or whatever else, you know, you have in your hand. So, or sorry, in your deck.
Yep, and then you Yorian Blanket and and then they cry.
Yeah. So, nice. I like it. Do you want to talk about it anymore, or do you want to choose one of mine?
Yeah, let me jump back to yours. You know, I don't think that this changed the deck too much, other than the fact that now we get to play a wish board, and that has a lot of fun things to go with it. What else we got here? There's a mono red here. Let's talk about what is going on there.
So
this is the Tirelf. You've been wanting to play Tirelf.
Yeah, so I used to play mono red devotion back in Theros Standard. And I kind of haven't touched it since. I thought it might be good back during, you know, the start of Pioneer. And then, like, every other deck was just doing so many more broken things than this. You know, but then we got the Ley Lines, you know, and we got the Modal Land cards. So I thought, you know, why not, you know, take a look at this again, see what I can add into it to kind of, you know, try to manipulate and make it easier to get that red devotion, you know, to win the game with. So we have Ash Zealot, Burning Tree Emissary, Edelon of the Great Revels are two drops to build early devotion. Of course, like I said, we have the Leyline of Combustion in there to get turn zero red mana sources. And because of that, I didn't think we needed any one drops. There's not really any good one drops worth playing anyways. I mean, unless you're ramping, why not? And like, there's no white red ramp cards. For three drops, I have Annex the Hardened in the Forge. This is kind of anti board wipe tech. You know, that's one of the biggest weak points of the mono red decks, is that, you know, when you get wiped, you're just dead. You know, but if they wipe the board and you have, like, you know, four or five creatures in a play, you still have a chance. Bone Crusher Giant's kind of like your removal instead of Wild Slash. I thought it would just be better because it turns into, you know, another, a pip of, you know, Red Devotion, you know, when it comes into play. Boros Reckoner, of course, adds a lot of devotion, but also sets up a combo kill later on. Phoenix of Ash is something I'm kind of adding in just because I said I wanted more ways to get around board wipes. And I have I'm going to have so many cards in the graveyard, it would be super easy to escape it. And, of course, it also has fire breathing, so it has access. Sorry, it has a way, a mana sink, to, you know, use all of that extra red mana that you can produce with Nykthos.
Yeah, that one I'm questioning a little bit, because I don't think that card ever saw any play.
Yeah, it's just something. Again, this is a brew. It's not good. Okay, I need to test this a lot more, probably. Fanatic Amogus, you know, if you have a lot of stuff on board, you play this, it deals a lot of damage. Purphoros, another good card. Pretty easy to turn into a creature. Keeps pinging people. Another good mana sink. All your creatures get +1/+0. Toralf, text says, whenever a creature planeswalker an opponent controls is dealt excess non-combat damage, Toralf deals combat equal, deals damage equal to the excess to any target other than that permanent. So, to work with this, I added in Torbran, which makes any resource cost, what makes any resource deal 2 more damage. And then I have some, I have Chandar, Torch of Defiance, not only for the card advantage, but also because she deals damage. I have Mizzia Mortars, which I'll play in the old version, which can hit all creatures for 6 mana. It deals 4 damage, but with Torbran, it would deal 6 damage to all your opponent's creatures. And I have Shatter Skull Smashing, which again, you know, if you tap for 6, it does. If X is 6 or more, it deals double that damage. So that kind of works well with Toroth as well. You know, you're being able to redirect any of that excess damage. I also have Star of Extinction, and this is probably too much of a meme card, but. Destroy target land, it deals 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. So, you know, if you have a Boros Reckoner in play, that's like a game winner right there. Or, if you have a Toroth in play and, you know, you play the Star of Extinction, anything that's on the board is basically going to kill your opponent. If they have any planeswalkers, if they have any, creatures, it'll be game over at that point.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if Toralf triggered. Yeah, so Toralf would still trigger because he wouldn't die to state-based damage until the excess damage has already been dealt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, any thoughts? Any suggestions?
You're kind of light on removal. Also, Burning Tyranitary seems a little bit... Like, Burning Tyranitary definitely seems good. I'm also a little worried it's a little bit awkward because, you know, he makes a red and a green and then you don't have anything else that can play. You know, you don't need one drops, you don't have any other green-red drops.
Yeah. I mean, usually you don't play it until turn 3 anyways when you have a Nykthos in play.
Got it.
And then you use that 2 mana just to make your Nykthos mana.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. It's not that good.
Hey, I mean, I've tried to meme with Boros Reckoner and Star of Extinction before. You know, we did get another one of, if you're going to go all in on that combo, we got like the, it was a 4-drop that I think has...
The Boros one?
Indestructible or something like that.
Was it Boros?
I'm going to look it up.
Red, white, maybe? So, are you going to choose another one of your decks then? Or should I check? Sure, should I choose?
Oh, so it was 5 mana. So Brash Taunter was 5 mana, 1/1 goblin, indestructible. When it's dealt damage, it deals that much to an opponent, and you can pay 3 to have it fight a creature.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're going to choose your last one then, and then maybe I'll...
Unless if there's one that you really wanted to talk about of what I've got here.
I always go for the jankiest one, so if you don't want to talk about...
I was going to say like Sultai Wreck maybe.
Yeah, if you want to do Sultai Wreck, this is basically just an update, right?
It is an update. I can also talk Niv. You know, let me talk Niv because I think that that's probably one of the decks I'm most excited to go out and play.
All right, so Niv.
So another Yorion deck. as far as the base here, you know, there's a lot of ways you can go with. We did a whole episode on Niv-Mizzet and some of the different things you can do there. That was with Claudio on the show.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of his lists, is where I worked off of it. I think it was the most recent one he had that 5-0'd as a 80-card list, as a Yorion list. And then there's a few cards here that I'm really focusing on. And the big one, just got to call it out, Valky, God of Lies. Mm. You know, I talked this up on the podcast that he plays so much better than he looks like he does. just as a card, like, there's a lot of things he does that seem really, really good. You know, his backside coming in at 5, you know, goes, it can go right up to 7 if there's nothing else going on. If your opponent does have some, like, one creature in play, you just exile it, and then you're so far ahead. Let me just read the backside and make sure everyone knows how it works. Is that with Bring to Light, when you find a card, it only cares about what the front side says. So you find Valky as a 2-mana card, it exiles it, and then it says, okay, cast that card. That card has two ways it can be cast. It can be cast as Valky, or it can be cast as Tibble. So you can choose to choose Tibble, you pay no mana, everything's good. Comes in at 5 loyalty, it can, when you cast, or when it enters the battlefield, you get an emblem that any card that he exiles, you can cast, and you can spend mana that's any color. So his +2 exiles a card from each player's library. That's basically just +2, draw 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
His minus is exile a creature or artifact, and then you get to play that creature or artifact. So it's, you know, it exiles and you get card advantage. Mm-hmm. It's like a better, what was the pirate that stole from people?
The Hostage Taker.
Yeah, Hostage Taker. Yeah, so this definitely replaces Hostage Taker. And then, you know, even the ultimate, it's one of those things that, like, on paper, a lot of these abilities seem innocuous, but, like, okay, exile all cards from all graveyards. It hates this graveyard deck. No, it puts all cards from all graveyards into your hand, basically. And then you get a Black Lotus.
Nice, yeah.
Because, you know, it adds red, but you can spend that mana as if it's any color, so you get 3 mana of any color.
Nice.
Not just that, you know, you can play lands off of him, so that counts too. Like, just a really, really powerful card, huge addition to this deck. That's the big thing I want to call out, is that, you know, it wasn't hard to find room for... I've got 2 copies of him. You can probably end up on just 1, and that might be right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Other than that, fun things that... You know, I do have a couple other 10 new cards that I'm trying out in this list. For one, I've got a Binding of the Old Gods in the sideboard.
Uh-huh.
This is a card that I did try in the main, and... It just ended up being a little bit too awkward. So it's a saga. If you guys didn't hear that one's the, you know, 1, destroys a non-land permanent. 2, you search for a forest of any type, put it into your battlefield tap. And then 3, gives your creatures death touch. So death touch doesn't matter much, but, you know, it exiles any permanent, and then you get a forest. And that forest doesn't have to be a basic forest. So you can go and grab, you know, a triome, any of your triomes, and put them into play.
I wanted to ask about Sarulf real quick. How are you using it in this deck?
Yeah, that I'll get to that. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, so Binding, I tried it in the main. The big problem was that you couldn't find it with your Bring to Light, you know, that can't find enchantments. So I ended up putting it back to Outer End, which does kind of the same thing without the extra lands.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like in the sideboard, because if you wish for it, then it's great. So Sarulf is the other card that I had tried as a one of, and just every time I play this card, it overperforms. I feel like right now this might be one of the cards from the set that I'm like, this card is underappreciated, because he's just looked really good every time I've played him. So he's a 3-mana 3/3. Whenever a permanent opponent controls put into a graveyard, he gets +1/+1 counter. So, like, that gets big. You know, you play this against Sultai Reclamation, and they're like, okay, it's a 3/3. I don't care. And then they, you know, play an Uro and put a Failed Passage into play, and now he's a 5/5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something they have to answer, and really quickly. And then, of course, he's at his best against the aggro decks, especially any of the Lurrus lists. Like, if he gets 2 counters on him, he exile your entire opponent's board. Like, that's just awesome. And then I do want to call out that he's a wolf. Very relevant in a deck that loves to play Tulsimir.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Tulsimir in play. If I've got Tulsimir in play already, I will sometimes go ahead and Bring to Light just for Sarulf. Because then he's a 3/3 that gains 3 life and then fights something down, which immediately puts a counter on him.
Yep. I like it.
That's about it. Oh, World Tree's also in this deck.
Yeah.
I think this list shows one of them. I'm up to 2 of them. I also think that the deck can play more Mono Confluence when it's running World Tree, because once you get to that World Tree, your Mono Confluences no longer deal you damage.
Okay. That's good to know. Good to know. I'm so disappointed there's no gods in here, but okay.
Yeah, which of the gods were you interested in? I mean, we've got Valky.
Yeah, I guess he's a god that you can search for. That's not bad, but, you know.
I haven't tried Essica. That's the one that I probably should be giving at least a one of in here as a tryout. You know, it's a 3-mana dork, which is kind of lame, but it's a 1/4 with vigilance, so that at least, you know, lasts a little while. It can pressure some things.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of your legendary creatures get the ability to tap to make any mana, including himself. So, like... maybe does something, but he can also then be played. If you wanted to, you could do the same trick and put the backside into play as the Prismatic Bridge, and then beginning of your upkeep, you reveal the top of your deck until you find a creature, Planeswalker, and put that onto the battlefield.
Mm.
So I feel like Prismatic Bridge, most of the time I wouldn't grab that over Niv-Mizzet, but if I'm casting it from my hand, it could be good, so I might give it a shot.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like, I mean, like I said, there's just so many choices. So many cards.
Yeah, that deck, you know, you can play anything in it. That's why I love it. I love the toolbox.
So, like I said, I mean, basically, we took Niv-Mizzet and gave it to, like, all these other colors. That's what this set feels like, you know, with Jeskai Fires now, and my last deck that I'm going to talk about, if you don't mind.
Go for
it. Is Red-White Dwarves. With
yes, the new Red-White Dwarves is a Niv-Mizzet deck, right?
No, it is a toolbox deck, though.
I mean, you could go and find Niv-Mizzet, and then he'll find your Dipala.
Eh, that's the only thing you could find.
No, don't worry, I'm joking. Go ahead.
So this has been testing way better than I thought it would be testing. I mean, it's been winning games. It kind of has two modes. In one mode, it's basically just kind of like a red-white dwarf aggro deck. We have Toolcraft Exemplar. We have Veteran Motorist. We have Dipala as one of our dwarf lords, as well as Vehicle Lord. And then, of course, Magda, the new dwarf lord that gives everybody +1/+0. And that's really what the deck tends to center around. You get her in there after having a couple early drops. We don't have a good quality one drop other than Toolcraft, so I had to put in Staunch Shieldmates for the time being, which is just a 1/3 vanilla card.
I know. It makes me just not want to play this deck every time I see that one mana 1/3.
And I'm not sure about the two drops. I have 7 dwarves in there now just because if you have multiples, they get huge.
How many?
I have 7 dwarves.
Yes.
And I mean, you could maybe play Metallic Mimic. I mean, there's a couple other new two drops that you could play. I'm just not sure which card's going to go. I think those are kind of like one of the flex spots. But basically, you have, I think, around 20-ish, 24-ish elf creatures here. We have
dwarf.
Dwarves?
Dwarf creatures, yeah. Yes.
Dwarves.
You said elf.
Sorry. I get them confused.
Illegal.
Yeah. So dwarves.
Plus Mutavault.
Yeah, I got Mutavaults in here. I thought Mutavault would be a really cool interaction because, you know, it becomes another dwarf. Not an elf, but it is an elf too if you need it to be. And I got Heart of Kirin's, of course, because we have a lot of dwarves. We'll be able to crew them, but also it has good interaction with Magda. When you can tap them at the end of your turn and make treasure tokens. You can tap them if you can't attack and make treasure tokens. We have Sky Sovereign as a one-off. This is kind of easier to cast. A lot of these 5-drops are easier to cast because if you make 2 treasure tokens from Magda on turn 3, the next turn you'll be able to play one of these 5-drops. So Sky Sovereign has that same interaction. You know, you tap it any time. Also gives you some removal access to removal for planeswalkers with, you know, 3 damage to pretty much any target other than a player. So some other enablers for Magda's ability. We have Obelisk of Urd as a one-off. It's a 6 mana enchantment, but it has Convoke, and so you can tap all your dwarves to put it in play, and then all those dwarves will get +2/+2 when you choose the dwarf archetype. Conclave Tribunal is kind of like your removal here. Again, it has Convoke, so you can play for free. You can tap and get those treasure tokens right away if you need to. And so I'm trying to think. I think the other cards I have in the main deck, I have Vanquisher's Banner just as a way to get some card advantage. You know, you choose. It's a 5 mana artifact that gives +1/+1 to all of the named creature archetype. And whenever you play a creature with that that type, you get to draw a card. So that kind of keeps it going. Think of it kind of like as a red-white dwarves. What's that green spell that draws you a card and puts a counter on something?
The Great Henge?
There we go. It's like a Great Henge for dwarves.
The Great Henge. Ooh, yeah. If you could throw the Great Henge in here.
If you want to do green. And then Embercleave, of course, is another. I only have one Embercleave just because you can tutor for it. And the other reason is because instead of giving one creature double strike and trample, why not give all your creatures double strike, but not trample? So I have Terror of Mount Velis is one of my targets for Magda's ability. It's a 5/5 7 mana dragon that has flying and double strike. And when it enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain double strike until the end of turn.
Okay.
So I figured that'd be like a nice little combat trick. You're attacking with, you know, 4 or 5 dwarves, and you know, 2 get through, and they're like four, you know, power each. And, you know, you play this double strike, that's 24 damage.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's the idea. And then, of course, Glorybringer is another piece of removal, and a searchable removal if you need it. And
so I like a lot of what's going on here. You know, this is, I think, what you and I have been talking about this deck a bit, so not too surprised about anything, so I'm interested. Where I'm definitely going to want to compare notes is I feel like every time somebody suggested you, like, hey, with Magda, you could search up blank,
yeah,
you put them all on your sideboard. So
Yep.
And I don't think that's right. You know, I feel like I want to know, like, do you think that any of these sideboard cards you'd be like, oh, in this matchup, I really don't want Embercleave. I really want Immortal Sun, you know, something like that.
Well, I mean, Immortal Sun, I definitely would want that against, how could I say?
Mountain Green Planeswalkers.
Well, any Planeswalker deck, like, maybe like Control, I could.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be bad in Omnath.
Like, I don't really need Obelisk of Urd so much in a Control matchup, so I would switch, you know, that out for the Immortal Sun. And, you know, God Pharaoh statues, another thing that's kind of hard for Control, I think, to get around. God Pharaoh's Gift, I thought, it's not bad, you know, against Control.
See, that's one I was saying early on, is I would love to see how you could brew around that, because 7 dwarves with God Pharaoh's Gift seems really cool.
Yeah, they become bigger, so they can become a 5/5 if you have 2 into play after getting that. So I thought that's like a good anti-board wipe card. I have Throne of the God Pharaoh in there, which is a 2-mana legendary artifact that at your end step, all tapped creatures deal damage equal. Let's say other player loses life equal to how many you have tapped. So it should be pretty easy.
So this card saw play at one point in some deck in Standard, but it wasn't great. But I guess I'm mildly interested, like if you can play this and make it an aggro list.
Yeah, you're tapping, I don't know, 6-7 creatures, and then you search up this, and then the end of the turn does 7 damage. Why not? I mean, especially if you've already dealt damage to them and you just needed a few more points of damage, it kills them at the end step.
Okay.
And then of course you have like all your other silver bullets for other decks, you know, like Grafdigger's Cage, Soulguide Lantern, Damping Sphere. These all can be searched. So I think eventually this sideboard will just become more of you know, silver bullet main deck. Right now it's just kind of more of a fun board, I would say. I got Meteor Golem. I got Dragonlord Atarka in there. Those will probably get dropped. Fairgrounds Warden I have in there as well, but I think that'll become Glass Casket, which somebody suggested.
So that's a dwarf, right?
Yeah, but Glass Casket is a 2-mana artifact that can be searched as removal. And I had considered playing Hellkite Tyrant in here as well. You know, if you're making all these tokens, you search it up and then you win the game because you have 20 artifacts.
So that's fun. So yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, the one drop seemed really bad. Like, yeah. A 1/3 and then Toolcraft is a cool card, but you know, you don't really have any good ways to curve out with him. Like, you have 3 Heart of Kirin, and that's kind of your only cheap artifact. So there's no, you know, Thraben Inspector, there's no Scarpeep Scrounger. Like, I kind of want like 12 artifacts that I can play.
Well, Magda makes, and if you're willing to wait a turn, Magda, whenever you attack, if you play that turn 1 and Magda turn 2 and you attack with the Toolcraft example, you're still hitting for 2. And then the next turn, it'll be a 4. It'll be 4 damage you're swinging with.
Okay, so that, you know, that's a little better, but yeah, that's where I'm a little worried, is that like the one drops seem really weak. I wish we had gotten one drops. I wish Wizards would print one drops.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a thing they do.
So, and that might be another reason for playing like Metallic Mimic instead of like the
I was gonna say, yeah, that was something I was gonna say, is like that would be another option at 2 that would be a dwarf and would be a
helps the exemplar, but... yeah. And it'd also make better the what do you call it, the dragon. If I decided to play that. Were there any other decks you wanted to talk about? Any of your brews? That's all of mine.
No. So, I mean, I'm happy to talk if anyone has questions on any of my brews. You know, some of them are straightforward. Some of them have some weird combo stuff going on. I did add descriptions in each of them if you check on the MTG Goldfish page. But, yeah, happy to talk about any of them. I don't need to go deep on any of them right now. You know, I've got a bunch of lists where I've tried to make, what is that card called? Cosmina good and haven't had the luck yet. You know, so I keep making bad Cosima decks. Yep, that's pretty much it.
So let's go over the Crew 3 podcast, deck trade, thing.
Yes, I'm excited about this. So I intentionally didn't look into these because I wanted to, get a first, what's my first view on these?
So they gave us four decks. We have a Thousand Year Storm deck. We have a Rakdos Valky deck, a Simic.
Well, hey, let's start with that one. I don't want to hear all the types until we, let's go right into it. So Thousand Year Storm deck. All right, so I'm expecting Thousand Year Storm. Yep, see it right there. Four of a six drop. All right. Bing, 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 what's going on here? So Thousand Year Storm, if anyone doesn't remember, when you recast instant or sorcery, you copy it for each other instant and sorcery spell you've cast before this turn. You choose new targets for the copies. So how are we breaking the game with that? So I see Rosethorn Acolyte is a way to add mana. I see, Opt, Electro Dominance, Growth Spiral, some removal, Seize the Spoils. This is three mana. Tormenting Voice, but you make a treasure token.
Mm-hmm.
Pirate's Pillage is also a 4 mana one that makes 2 treasure tokens. So I guess the idea there is that if you cast Pirate's Pillage, it pays for itself with 4 treasure tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we win? What's our win con? I guess
because you're storming. The Thousand Year Storm makes copies for each other instance and sorcery spell you've cast before it this turn. So basically, if you cast a lightning strike and then you cast another lightning strike, then basically,
then the second one deals 6.
Yeah, the six or Electro Dominance, I guess, would also. But it wouldn't copy the X. I guess it makes a lot of mana, or
it copies the X. Yeah,
I'm guessing
the X is chosen when you cast the spell. So on the stack, if it has X of 5, the copy would have X of 5.
Yeah, I'm guessing lightning strike maybe.
Yeah, or, Electro Dominance seems like the actual win con.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have hated...
you can make a lot of, like I said, treasure tokens, copy, 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 and then boom, big dominance.
Yeah, so once you've got 1,000, if you can Thousand Year Storm and then, Rose Thorn and then go Pirate's Pillage, that pays for itself, then you can Seize the Spoils, that pays for yourself. Mm-hmm. By that point, you've hopefully drawn another Pirate's Pillage or something, which would then, plus mana. Maybe you can turn through your deck that way. Growth Spiral could also be mana neutral if you've got enough lands in hand for a big enough, Electro Dominance for 3 or 4 to kill them.
Yeah. Any suggestions?
That's pretty all in on a 6-mana enchantment.
Yeah. How would you change this?
So you not only have to get to the 6-mana enchantment, but you have to do it with a full hand of spells.
I think
and for those reasons, yeah. I'm out.
I think you would lose early to aggro decks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You also lose 2 counter spells pretty hard.
Yeah. So we definitely need a little bit more tweaking. It's an interesting idea. But maybe another, other than Lightning Strike or Electro Dominance, maybe another way to win as well, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about the split card, the blue-red one? Expansion Explosion might have been another option.
Yeah. Nice, nice.
Because that at least does something early
so
on.
So kind of like...
You can copy your Lightning Strike.
Reckless Wreck, kind of.
Yeah,
there we go.
Reclamation, but with Pirate's Pillage instead of Reclamation.
All right, so I'm gonna choose the next one if that's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So I like this idea of a Simic Visionary deck. So it uses Bio Visionary. It looks like it's the main win condition here, which is
All right, let me read this one. 3 mana, 2/3. Uh-huh. At the beginning of your end step, if you control 4 or more creatures named Biovisionary, you win the game.
And basically this deck is playing tons of shapeshifters, tons of mimics and stuff. So he's got Glasspool Mimic, which enters as a copy of the creature you control. We have Mirror Image, which is 3 mana, 0/0, but it enters the battlefield as a copy of any creature you control. It also has Orvar the All Form, which says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, if it targets 1 or more other permanents you control, you create a token that's a copy of 1 of those permanents. So you're just, targeting Biovisionary, making more copies of it. And I guess whenever you have to discard it as well, you can also make another copy of Biovisionary. Realm Walker looks like that's used to kind of get you to be able to play all of those biovisionaries or clone effects from the top of your deck. It's got Collected Company, so yeah, most of these are 3 mana, so they could easily come into play.
Yeah, so Realm Walker and Orvar are also both still shapeshifters, yeah, even though they don't copy themselves.
Yeah. And then we have Absorb Identity, which is interesting. It says return target creature to its owner's hand. You may have shapeshifters you control become copies of that creature until the end of turn.
Yeah, so that seems like the combo there is that you've got, you know, one Biovisionary in play. Yeah. You cast Absorb Identity, 2 of your shapeshifters, so your Realm Walker, your Orvar.
Yeah.
You know, even if you just got... So I think, okay, you've got Biovisionary, Orvar in play. You cast Absorb Identity. You make a copy of Biovisionary. Mm-hmm. Orvar becomes a Biovisionary. You replay the Biovisionary. I guess it's only 3. So you need one more there, but...
And I also see they have Mutavault, which is another great idea, you know, because it's a shapeshifter as well.
It is not a shape... Okay, so it is a shapeshifter because it's all creature type. So yes, it is.
Not a changeling, but it has its shapeshifter. And then... Yeah, I mean, they have quasi-duplicate. There we go. To make a token as another copy effect. So I like this. It's interesting. I'm not sure about the Elvish Visionary. I know they want, you know... card draw and whatnot, but I think there's a better card draw perhaps, and you know, something else that you can use, maybe either another
I thought that was Elvish Mystic when I was reading this.
Yeah, well, is it? It says Elvish Visionary here, but
yeah, see the Elvish Visionary. You know, it's a way to draw cards, and
maybe it was supposed to be,
I guess, Mystic. You can copy it and draw more cards.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I don't know, maybe I would play like Metallic Mimic here just because it's a shapeshifter.
So that's also not a shape. You can name shapeshifter, yeah. I guess.
Well, it is a shapeshifter, right? Its type is shapeshifter.
No. Is it?
Metallic Mimic, yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, but yeah, you can name shapeshifter as well. So that might help with the combo. But otherwise, I think this is a lot stronger than the other ones.
Yeah, so I'd want to go ahead and play this a whole bunch and see... How quickly it wins is the question here.
Yeah, and I guess the targeting here, Orvar kind of works with Absorb Identity and Quasi-Duplicate as well, so.
Yeah, the only card, you know, I wish I saw in here, I think, is Mystic Reflection. I wonder if they've tried that out.
It makes the copy, right?
Yeah, so that makes the copies, yeah. So you could, you know, have, you know, you've got an Elvish Visionary, you can say, okay, I'll enter as a copy of Biovisionary.
Nice.
Or... you're about to collect a company, you can have him enter as a Biovisionary.
There we go. There we go.
Even works with Orvar to make an extra copy there.
Yeah, I like it. I think this deck has potential. Interesting take.
Interesting.
So your choice, what are you going to talk about next?
I was just going to go to the next one down the list here, whatever it is.
The Rakdos Valky deck?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, I wanted to come into these fresh, so I haven't gone through these. So Valky. Love a Valky deck. So this is a Lurrus deck, so everything here is going to cost 2 or less. I see Dreadhorde Arcanist, Tissue Supplier, Kroxa, Valky, Young Pyro. Okay, so this looks like the red-black Pyromancer list with Valky added into it. And I actually watched Ekeros play a very similar list this morning. I'm going to quick pull up what his list looked like, just so I can compare. You know, I tend to trust what he was doing is fairly good.
I'm guessing it works like the same way, right? You bring it back from the graveyard, and you can choose.
So, right? No, you can't bring back Valky as Tybalt. With Lurrus, you put the spell on the stack, and then Lurrus checks if that's legal. So putting Tybalt on the stack from the graveyard would not be a legal play.
So it doesn't work that way. So, like, same thing with Agadeem's Awakening or Claim to Fame?
Yeah, no, all of those only bring back the front face.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, this is a deck that can run out of gas, and eventually playing a 7-drop doesn't seem terrible. You know, maybe you would only want a couple, but I don't mind that they're trying them out. Got 3 in here.
Oh. Okay, so does it make the deck better, you think?
Yeah. It should. So here I'm looking at what... I'm looking at this list I saw across playing this morning. You know, very similar. So they're down a Village Rites. They're down... They've got an extra Valky. Just trying to see if they're missing anything. He's throwing Kolaghan's Command, but I know he didn't... Oh, no, they've got Kolaghan's Command too. So yeah, this seems like a solid list. You know, 61 cards. Oh, one of those is the Lurrus.
Yeah.
How is the mana base? Because I know that that's probably a struggle.
We get the Blight Step Pathways. I am so happy for that card.
Yeah, definitely a cool card. I know that what Ekros was having a lot of problems with is Dragon Skull Summit has gotten a lot worse. You know, this deck has only a few Mountains and Swamps now, so it comes in awkwardly. I don't mind the Urborg there. I think that might be a good, nice addition to help with that problem.
Yeah. Yeah, Dragon Skull Summit, definitely don't care for that anymore.
No, this is my kind of list. You know, this seems nice and competitive.
Yeah. All right, so last one then?
Sure, yeah.
Then we can wrap it up. So this is more my kind of thing. They made a Giants archetype, Temur Giants. So
Temur, right?
Temur. Yeah, maybe it's Temur.
I don't know.
So Bone Crusher Giant, of course. Crystalline Giants, the 3-mana artifact from Ikoria that you can, it gets like a certain ability each turn. I think that's kind of cool.
The one that you don't want to play unless if you're on Moda or Magic Arena.
There we go. It's so hard to keep track of everything. He's got Beanstalk Giant as a way to grab mana, but also to play as a big giant later on. Uro, of course, is an Elder Giant. Calamity Bearer, so the one of the new ones, the 4-mana 3/4, and it says if a giant source you control would deal damage to a permanent, it deals double that damage. That's cool. Quakebringer, so that's the one that is like the Sulfuric Vortex. Your opponents can't gain life, and it deals 2 damage to each opponent if it's in play or
in the graveyard. You control another giant.
And it has Foretell. Realm Walker is a way to get more, giants into play. It also counts as a giant because it's Changeling. You get some Wild Slash because you got a lot of 4 power creatures in here, so it should make it very easy to use that secondary ability. And the Mutavaults, because those kind of act as giants as well. Okay, so what do you think?
So I feel like during spoiler season, this is exactly the kind of deck I was thinking of, and I was like, okay, as soon as we see what our 1 and 2 mana changelings are, that's what's going to make or break this deck, you know, hoping for like a nice blue one, hoping for a nice green one. We didn't get them, we didn't get anything. I've already ranted about it enough, how much I'm mad at Wizards for that, but that's what really I think hurts this deck, is that, you know, you've got Lawn of War, you've got Bone Crusher. Those are really your only 1 and 2 mana plays. A couple Wild Slash and Growth Spiral, which maybe seems a little bit out of place here.
Yeah, I don't think you need that, actually.
Yeah.
There's actually quite a few other giant spells that didn't show up in this build that I thought he should have played. Like,
so what were you thinking of for other giant spells?
There was that Giant Wizard that whenever there's an Agar, the Freezing Flame, when a creature or planeswalker an opponent controls is dealt excess damage, if a Giant Wizard or spell you control dealt damage to it this turn, draw a card. It's a 3/3 for 3. And I think that'd be, you know, much better. I mean, you have like with the Calamity Bearer, which deals extra damage anyways. So it seems like a really good combination with that. Like maybe instead of the Crystalline Giant, you know, bring that in.
I wasn't too into that one, but maybe it's as good as Crystalline Giant. They're both 3-mana 3/3s.
Or like a Quakebringer. I mean, you could probably drop, you know, a couple of those, or even like getting rid of the Growth Spiral. You know, just instead of Growth.
So, yeah, what I was going to say is like, what I wish this deck had was more ways to fill the graveyard. Because, you know, that's what I think would be so good with Quakebringer and with Uro is ways to, you know, quickly fill up the yard. What if that Growth Spiral was Satyr Wayfinder instead?
Satyr Wayfinder.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, yeah, you put the Quakebringer in there. That's nice. And you put Uro in there. I guess that could work.
Yeah.
You know, as
a way. You reset your library for Realm Walker, maybe.
And I think there's some really cool sideboard cards. Like, they have the Battle of Frost and Fire that deals 4 damage to each non-giant creature. That'd be a good sideboard card that I would add to this. What other things do they have? I think, isn't there like a red-green one as well that fights?
That's a troll card. You know, there's nothing specifically about it. There's Invasion of the Giants, which I didn't think was very good.
Yeah, I'm looking.
I wish that, you know, I'd been wanting to see Glimpse the Cosmos. That was one where I was like, okay, well, once we see the blue giants, and we really didn't get any giants in blue, again, I don't know what they were doing. It was goofy. Because that card, I think, would have been cool if it worked. That one's the, like, 2-mana It's anticipate, but it's sorcery speed. Mm-hmm. But if you control a giant, you can cast it for blue from your graveyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess...
Maybe I'll still try making that deck. I'm going to try making that card work later.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, drop the Growth Spiral and maybe just, like, add those couple more giants in there. And like you said, I like the idea of putting stuff in the graveyard as well to fuel Uro and make Quakebringer better. Because then it just starts pinging them for 2 or 4 or 6, right?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, I'm tired. How about you?
Hopefully we gave them the respect for their decks. You know, I think those are all fun, different things than what we had had. So I'm glad that we got to do this trade. Very interested to see what they thought of, you know, some of our chaotic lists.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're going to choose. We gave them like 30 or 40 lists, so.
Oh, yeah, I told them to take whatever they want. So whatever is going to be fun. But yeah, that is going to bring us into our show. You know, we've talked for longer than we usually do.
On brews.
But if you guys want to hear what we think, if you want to get info on any of these deck lists we just talked about, if you want a link to the Crew 3 podcast as well, go ahead and follow us on Twitter. I am at MDG Pioneer is the best way to reach us. You can also find our Discord information from there where these deck lists are posted and is a great way to contact the two of us.
Yes, and of course you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoschwenky, Yoschwenky. And, you know, we talked about a lot of jank today, and I just want to, again, push my new channel on our Discord channel called Ryan's Channel of Jank. So come on in and let's brew.
All right, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online, along with the Crew 3 podcast. Can't forget to shout them out one more time. But we are the First Pioneers podcast, and we're signing off.